This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
As mentioned, we are Lynn, Kelvin and Ayman, and we're talking about the big news from yesterday about Undi 18. This is after MPs voted unanimously to amend the constitution and lower the voting age to 18. There were only 11 MPs not present yesterday, and then everyone else who was there voted yes, zero nays, no abstaining.
So this is fantastic news that at least for, if not the first time, the second time, that there is bipartisan support for something so important to our electoral system. And the general mood is optimism and just a sense of how historic yesterday's vote was. In Tun Mahathir's words, it's an achievement for the people of Malaysia.
But at the same time, there are also those who point out some of the things that we need to work on now that the amendment has passed. Most importantly is the issue of malapportionment that was highlighted by Bersih, which they say will become worse now that there will be more voters.
Yeah, so today we're going to look at how we'll move forward, because like we said, it's great news.
Yes.
You know, before all this happened, we were looking at whether or not we would ever see bipartisan support, and now, yay, we have that.
Got our wish.
Yes, but there are also just so many other issues that are associated with this thing, especially with the amendments of automatic voter registration.
Yep.
So we need to look, I think, specifically at what we're going to be doing, hopefully, about malapportionment in Malaysia.
So the first to ring the alarm bell was, of course, Bersih upon the bill passing in the lower house. They did bring up in a statement that said that the scale of malapportionment of constituencies would now be exacerbated because of the lowering of the voting age and also because of automatic voters registration. So they've also brought up the separate issue of the Sabah redelineation report, which is going to be debated in Parliament either today or tomorrow. I believe they might be debating it right now.
Yeah.
And yeah, because before this, we were wondering, what is the catch behind the opposition asking for auto-registration and in addition to the lowering of the voting age to 18? So this is one of it, how these conditions help contribute to the malapportionment.
I think it's more, I don't know if it's contribute so much as prop up, right? I mean, in a way, it's propping up something that will take a lot of time to fix, that requires a lot of effort, and yet again, this sort of complete and total support, which it is unlikely to get. And it's a long-running thing. So I don't intend to, if we get too pessimistic for you on the show because we're talking about malapportionment and you're like, why can't they just celebrate something nice? I would suggest you go look at that photo of Syed Saddiq and Wee Ka Siong, because that warms the cockles of everybody's heart. It's nice to see that being out there. I just wanted to mention that. But beyond that, right, beyond the optics of this, I suppose, beyond Parliament and the fact that it looks great for everybody involved, there are just these deep underlying issues where, so you can agree on this one thing, fantastic. Now can you start to agree on the other so that the Election Commission can do something, so that the people who want to fix and address this issue will be able to move? I think that is the true test here about whether that can be done.
And the work starts now, really, for the Election Commission. They have to clean up the electoral rolls and sort out this apportionment issue if they want to ensure that future elections can be done in a very full of integrity way.
Yeah, well, that's part of it also. And the reason why it is an important piece of the conversation is that, I guess, it's the first very important point is that it's the value of our vote, right? How much is it worth? So it's supposed to be one vote, one person, but because of malapportionment and with the fact that youth voting and automatic voter registration exacerbates that, that means it's very likely that in urban areas, specifically, the value of our votes has dipped because of the number of and how population of youths are spread out throughout the country.
Well, that and also the fact that the very last redelineation exercise that happened right before the GE, I think that exacerbated it further.
Yes.
I mean, if we're talking about exacerbation, this is sort of problem upon problem upon problem.
So we haven't begun to talk about gerrymandering yet either.
That's the thing. So it's a sort of piling up of different things that have occurred for political expediency, that have been done for any number of reasons. And so while, yay, incredibly happy, truly about this, the fact that now we have that youth vote, I think it's also time to consider how it changes the makeup of the voting populace and then what needs to be done in order to address what you just said, right? Mm-hmm. That understanding or that idea of fairness among everything else.
I'm also interested to know how the male apportionment, now that there are more voters, since we're bringing it down to 18 years old, which states or which constituencies will be most affected and will be most changed by the reducing of the voting age to 18, and how it will improve or maybe reduce the chances of the government or the opposition parties in the next general election.
And I guess that is something that we need to see the hard numbers, right, to truly get. Because you're right, it's not an even thing. It's not going to be, it's not, here is a problem. It is evenly distributed throughout the country. We'll solve it together. It's a little trickier than that. We're going to be speaking after this with Dr. Wong Chin Huat, currently researching issues relating to democracy and communal politics. And a little later on at 6:30, after the 6:30 news, if his schedule allows, we're also going to be speaking to the Election Commission Chairman, Art Harun, to just, I guess, find out not just how he's feeling about it, but, well, what can be done.
Yeah.
So that will be coming your way later. But let us know your thoughts. You know, do we need to fix this issue of malapportionment? How do you think it can be done? Call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
You're listening, of course, to the Evening Edition with Lynn, Ayman and Kelvin. And we've been talking about Undi 18 and the issues that come along with it, especially now that automatic voter registration has been rolled into the whole thing. There's this issue of malapportionment. There's this issue of redelineation and limitation exercises. So we do need to try and address all the different aspects of that. And for that, we're crossing over to Dr. Wong Chin Huat, currently researching issues relating to democracy and communal politics at Sunway University's Jeffrey Sachs Center on Sustainable Development. Chin Huat, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So first things first, with this passing of the bill to lower the voting age yesterday, you know, what do you think were the main reasons for that unanimous decision on the bill?
Two reasons. One, the topic is, the proposal is very highly legitimate, meaning that to say, I reject that, it's not going to work for the public. Second, there was consultation between the ruling parties and the coalition and the opposition.
So there have been public opinions that the lowering of voting age will worsen the scale of malapportionment of our constituencies. Could you explain to us where this view is coming from?
Right. Now, the malapportionment of constituency can be divided into two parts. First is between the states, and second, within the states. Let's take Selangor, for example. The largest constituency has 179,000 in G14, while the smallest, Sabah Benang, has only 41,000. The largest, Bangi, is 4.38 times the smallest, Sabah Benang. But overall, Selangor has an average of 110,000. While Pahang has only 59,000. Selangor, an average constituency is 1.86 times that of Pahang. Now, when we're going to add it...
Hi. Okay, I think we might have lost Chin Huat there. Oh, Chin Huat.
Oh.
Hi. Hi. We have a bit of a technical mix-up. We were attempting to have both Dr. Wong Chin Huat as well as election chairman Azhar Harun. So who you're hearing now, actually everybody else, is Art Harun. Art, welcome to the show. Hi. Sorry about that.
Hi, no problem.
Okay, so can you talk to us? I think one of the main concerns that has propped up in all of this is that with this increase in the number of voters, we are going to see... The same old recurring issues with the idea of malapportionment, with, you know, the whole fairness of, you know, one vote, one person. How would you like to respond to that? I mean, what can be done?
Okay, first of all, I think we are speculating because we do not really know. I do not really have the numbers now as to how many... Sorry, are we talking about Sarawak or the whole Malaysia again?
I think we can do both, really. I mean, beginning with all of Malaysia and then also talking about Sabah.
Okay, sorry. The redelineation in respect of the whole Tanah Melayu and Sarawak were done prior to GE14 last year. Of course, the last year, it did not take into consideration the number of voters which is going to increase after the automatic registration has been implemented, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as it was done last year, so I suppose the numbers of voters that was taken into consideration while the redenomination exercise was being done before was the numbers that was available at that time. Yeah. So of course, even during that time, there were allegations of malapportionment already, right?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the redenomination exercise was approved by the parliament prior to the GE14. So we really can't do anything with or without automatic registration. That redelineation exercise is with us for the next 8 years, you know, and that is the constitutional framework. That is the restraint that we have now, or rather, that is the constraint that we have now.
And we do have Dr. Wong Chin Huat back on the line with us. I think, you know, earlier we were speaking a little bit about this idea that lowering the voting age would actually worsen this idea of malapportionment, which I guess, you know, is an issue of perspective. It's a view being put forth. Could you perhaps talk to us about where this view is coming from?
Right. As I mentioned just now, you have both interstate malapportionment and intrastate malapportionment, where we're going to add 8 million new voters across the board. And this voters are more likely to be concentrated in popular states like Selangor rather than Pahang. And between Selangor, more likely to be in Bangi than Sabah Bernam. So the gap between constituency between the same state and between states would get worse. So we are very likely we're going to have a situation that one seat, one constituency may have 5-6 times the number of electorate in another constituency, and those who stand to lose out would be urban youth. So we're going to get young people coming in and say, well, we're going to give you the right, but then they realize they would be actually second-class citizens. So that's really the issue. Can I respond to what Sadara Al-Harun said just now?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. I respectfully disagree with his view. The reason being this. The review, once it was done, is completed and the 8 years started there.
Yeah.
So it will start actually on February 2017 and until 2025. It's not, you can't start a new review under current, under normal circumstances. However, the reason why it has not been adopted by Parliament and therefore was not enforced, it's really because a clause in our 13th schedule of the Federal Constitution leaves enough ambiguity for the Prime Minister not to act. It says as soon as maybe, after the EC has submitted a report to the Prime Minister, then the Prime Minister should table it, lay it before the House of Representatives. It didn't say how fast. And the former Prime Minister, Najib Razak, had sat on it. The current Prime Minister can continue to sit on it. Why an advocate to exploit this loophole is because the reason for a normal 8 years gap is population growth. Between 8 years, you probably have 10-20% of population growth. Now, if we compare the 8 million addition to the 14.9 million we have, this is more than 50%. So not just Sabah, everywhere, after the expansions of electorate, we need to see whether it still makes sense to keep the current constituency boundary. If they don't, we need to start it again. There is a shortcut of bypassing the 8 years, if not changing the rule of the game, and that is to add seats either in the parliament or respective state assembly. So the reason why I do not think that Sabah, the plan, the proposal for Sabah need to be implemented is that the Prime Minister can continue to exploit the loophole for the expansion of electorate to complete. After that, the Sabah State Assembly can then add seats against today's assembly. and the process can be restarted. If we are not going to restart, then the promise of expanding voting rights would be hollow. If we're going to restart soon, in a year's time, to adopt it now would just merely add on to the work of EC and create confusion.
Asa, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, I need to respond to that. Hi, Chin Huat, by the way. How are you? okay. I beg to differ with what Dr. Wong said. I mean, the first thing to say, to note is this. Once the redelineation exercise is done by the SPR, and I wasn't involved at all, this was done last year. Once it was done and handed to the Prime Minister, the SPR is, in legal term, functus officio. Their function has been performed, and they have got no more function to perform. All right? And under the law, under the current constitutional framework, once that report was given to the Prime Minister then, SPR was functus officio, and that exercise was completed, deemed completed under the law. And the 8-year starts running then. And we cannot do it anymore, even though the Prime Minister sat on it or did not lay that report in the Parliament. We can't do it anymore because it is deemed to have been done. So the 8 years starts running and is applicable, regardless of what happened, whether it was laid in the Parliament, whether it was rejected or whatever. We cannot do it anymore. If we do it again, it will have been unconstitutional and, in fact, illegal. That is the constitutional restraint or rather constraint that I am facing, you know. That's number one.
Okay,
Number two, just allow me a minute.
Okay.
Number two is the constraint that we have is 8 years and not population growth. Of course, the rationale for the 8 years, as correctly pointed out by Dr. Wong just now, is within 8 years, it is assumed that there will be population growth. Yes, it's correct. But the constraint that was given and stated in the Constitution is 8-year period. So regardless of whether there is a growth or not during the 8-year period, we are stuck with the 8-year period. That is the problem. Unless the constraint is changed to population growth, like in Australia, it is once there is a population growth, then the redelineation board can do redelineation. And that is stated as such, you know. But here we have 8 years, and that's the constraint that we have, you know.
Okay, so we do have to move on. I have a question for Azhar.
Sorry, may I respond to that very quickly?
I agree
with Azhar about that the EC has no business to play after the review is done. But as I have pointed out earlier, that this 8 year gap can be broken by adding seats to Parliament or State Assembly.
For me,
the Prime Minister can continue sit on it until the expansion done and then trigger a new round. You have agreed, that there's nothing to actually force the Prime Minister to abide by Section 9.
That is correct. I mean, if the State Legislative Assembly now sit and amend their constitution to change the number of seats, yes, then it triggers it automatically. I agree.
And Asa, would you agree that after the expansion of electorate, we should really look at the number of population across the constituency, and to see whether there's a need to restart delineation by means of seat increase?
Well, I mean, under the present circumstances, I think that will be a matter for the State Legislative Assembly to have a look and to deliberate. You know, it's not for me to say that it should be or it shouldn't be. I mean, I'm the SPR, so I really can't say so.
All right, gentlemen, we will hopefully be continuing this conversation. We do have to stop at the moment for 6:30 news, we will be kind of delving into the issue of the youth vote, I think, in a little more detail. And of course, you've been listening to Dr. Wong Chin Huat and Azhar Azizan Harun, or Art Harun, Chairman of the Election Commission, kind of exchanging views. A fair and frank exchange of views has been what's going on. After this, like we said, getting into a bit more detail about what has happened. If you have any thoughts, you can share them. Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
6:35 in the evening, and you're listening to Lynn, Kelvin, and Ayman, and we're talking about the Undi 18 situation. The fact that we now have passed that bill, you know, that will account for the youth voting bloc as well as automatic voter registration, mm-hmm. and potentially you'd be able to run as an 18-year-old MP should you so wish. But of course, there are other issues that have been brought up in relation to this. So things like malapportionment,
gerrymandering,
And a chunk of that earlier, we were hearing from both our guests, Dr. Wong Chin Huat, as well as Azhar Azizan Harun, Art Harun, and a lively exchange of views, shall we say. But there were some other questions that we did want to pursue, so let's welcome them both back on air. Gentlemen, hi. Thank you so much for holding.
Hi.
All right. So let's start with Art. I mean, which states or constituencies do you see being most affected by the addition of young voters?
Well, we do not have the exact data yet, but I think, Selangor might have a lot. But I suppose we cannot say for sure that the urban area would have more young voters than the rural area, because we must remember that most 18-year-olds who are now studying in the urban areas may still be using their home address in their IC, you know, and their home address may be in the villages. So until we collect all the data and look at them and properly analyze them, we will be speculating, actually.
And Art, with the bill that was passed yesterday also incorporating auto-registration of voters, what does it mean for efforts to address malapportionment?
Well, I mean, you know, as I said just now, the constitutional provision as it is now provides a re-delineation exercise based on time, i.e. 8 years, you know. So the 8 years is prescribed. So, of course, the rationale behind the eight years time limit is probably what Dr. Wong said just now. The rationale is in 8 years, the law it is presumed that the population will grow, right? But regardless of that, the constraint and the criteria is 8 years. It is a time constraint and time criteria and not population growth, you know? So that re-delineation exercise was done and approved last year. So we are stuck with 8 years, regardless of whether there has been population growth or there has been a surge, an upsurge in the number of voters being registered. That's the problem that we have. And if the policymakers decide to change that to population growth, then yes, so be it, you know.
And Chin Huat, what are your thoughts about how auto-registration of voters will affect efforts to address malapportionment?
I think after the expansion of electorate, both for Undi 18 and also automatic registration, that the old boundary we have in Sarawak, that's 2015, and in Sabah 2017, in Semenanjung 2018, would all become risk becoming obsolete. So by then, I think what the EC should do is to provide the most latest detail immediately, and it's for the parliament to decide whether they want to move on. But I think it's important. I would wish that actually the government can actually undertake this commitment to redress malapportionment after expansion of electorate. It's not just because that the previous exercise was done very, very badly. We did not have R10, otherwise it would be different. But also because that even if it was done right, after adding more than 50% of the number to the map, it's sure going to cause some distortion. It's unlikely to imagine that the 8 million will be divided evenly into 222 parliamentary constituency seats and 600 state seats, right? It's not likely going to be that way.
Yeah, agreed. If I may say something about that, yeah, I mean, the only exception to the...
Hello?
Hello?
Or hey, whether at state level, hello?
Yeah. Yes, Art, if you could continue your point, yeah.
Sorry, so the only exception to the 8-year rule is the change of the number of seats, whether in the parliament or in the state. So, of course, it is up to the policymakers now to look at the numbers and to try to change the state constitution or the federal constitution to change the number of seats, in which case the rebalancing exercise is automatically triggered, despite the 8-year constraint. So, to amend the federal constitution or state constitution, you need 2/3 majority. And, well, who knows? I mean, yesterday we got 100%. So, who knows? It might be attainable again, you know?
Yeah. Right, right. And I guess... Right, let's make this a quick one, yeah?
Yeah, sorry. To add seats in the state, some of the states do not actually require a 2/3. So the number that, if you look at it, the PH government, PH, if they want, they can actually trigger, without much political difficulties, in a number of states, up to 90 parliamentary seats.
Right, okay. So this is a question for the both of you, and it's with regards to what happened yesterday. Bursey broke the parliament embargo on the Sabah report by revealing online, as they said that the public should be aware of the contents before parliament debates it. So should redelineation reports be made available to the public? Why don't we have Dr. Wong answer it first?
Well, I certainly think so, because last year I was the one who broke it, and I went to Parliament to offer the 1,005, but say I'm just repeating what I did.
Fair enough.
We're looking into a criminal here.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Art, what do you think?
It's not real disappointment.
Okay. I do not know for the future. We need to engage more and to find a way of to make it public, but... But currently, the trend is this, okay? Every redelineation exercise, the SPR would undertake the first draft and would display it to the public and would listen to the public's objection. So that's first round. And after listening to the first round objection, the SPR would do the second round draft and again would display it to the public and would invite objection. And there will be objection. So that objection, the second objection, will also be taken into consideration. And the SPR will then make the final report, the third round, the final report. The final report is, however, not required by the law to be displayed at all. And there is no more avenue for objection in respect of the final report. In fact, the current constitutional framework is that the final report must then be handed by the SPR to the Prime Minister and the Prime Minister alone. Okay. Having looked at the constitutional framework, especially 13th schedule, in that respect just now, we are of the opinion that SPR made the third report for the Prime Minister, and the report then belongs to the Prime Minister. It is then for the Prime Minister to decide whether to make it public or not. We must remember, under the present constitutional framework, the Prime Minister is not even obliged to present it to the Cabinet. He is not. He can lay to the Parliament as soon as the case may be, and that's about it. So the prerogative is really his. So that is, in our opinion, what the constitutional framework is all about now.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Wong Chin Huat and Art Harun weighing in on the issue of the youth vote and how it relates to things like malapportionment, redelineation. If you have any thoughts, you can send them through. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Bob says, unless a delineation exercise takes place, the lowering of the voting age to 18 could mean the downfall of the government. The move will drastically increase the influence of rural votes. And then Kamar Nizam says, I think it's a good result, but it's also so our current government. We make decisions first, think about the consequences later. I just hope there won't be a U-turn. Why can't there be a good plan and consensus before we decide on what to do?
And I do somewhat agree with that point, that we did in principle make a very good decision to lower the voting age, but there are because of the current situation and the context of our voter numbers, our democracy, and how we've shaped the constituencies and all that, there is the consequences that we have to deal with, unfortunately.
In this case, though, I mean, is it not a good plan and consensus? Is a unanimous vote not consensus? So, I I'm not sure that this is the same as all the other times that the government has, you know, tried to make changes.
But it depends as well who they consulted before voting for the Undi 18, because sure, they consulted the opposition, but I wonder to what degree do they involve other stakeholders as well, such as SPR, and how it will affect the logistics of it all, like auto-registration, how long it will take, the cost of it behind it.
So we will be continuing this conversation, I'm sure, in all its forms, but we are also going to be moving on after this to the issue of teaching maths and science in English. It is one of those things that has been coming up time and time again and recently reared back up. Mm-hmm. So if you have any thoughts on that, again, that number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.